This is Karen Lyle of SalesPort Talk, and I invite you to listen into a conversation I had with Sir Robin Knox Johnson about the weather encountered at sea by racers in a round-the-world clipper race.
If you go down the South Atlantic and you're getting down towards Uruguay and Argentina, indeed, you get quite a lot of squalls, and they're nasty, and they're renowned amongst seamen because they come up with very little warning and they hit you very hard. And everyone thinks, you know, oh, well, sailing down there is nice and easy. No, it isn't. It can be really, really difficult. And you've got to be totally alert. And the whole secret is, when you see a potential thing coming in, get your sails down fast, because otherwise the wind is going to blow you on your side.
Yesterday we were sailing along 24 hours out from finishing the race. Come across a few occluded fronts, as they call them in the local area, cigar fronts. We experienced between 60 to 80 knot squalls coming through. One final test after 5,000 miles, an incident with not being able to release our tack line in time, which resulted in, can I put this nicely, the explosion of our code 2 kite. Good effort from everybody to get it down. What can I say about the weather? Lightning pretty much throughout the entire evening. Fork lightning all throughout the sky for 12 hours or so.
What you got to realize is those crews are amateurs. They've had a 4 weeks training, and by this time they've sailed about 5,000 miles, so they're not exactly amateurs. But nevertheless, for them, exploring the different areas of the ocean and the different weather systems you can get is still something they've got to learn about. And coming down that coast can be difficult. And people think, you know, it's a piece of cake. No, it isn't. The sea never lets you off. You've got to be alert the whole time. We always used to say, you know, the whole thing about a seaman is he's alert. And you've got to be alert, because those systems come through and they can knock the boat on its side. You know, suddenly people who've never been out of their drawing room, finding their whole world's turned 90 degrees. And yet they come out of it and they survive it and they come out of it. And when I went and met them in Uruguay, in Punta del Este, when they finished, you could see the pride they got, because they'd been through something really difficult and they come out of it. And I thought, bless you, you're now learning. And you've every reason to be proud of yourselves.
To see the video of that boat in the thunderstorm, go to SalesportTalk.com and click on Round the World Clipper Race Uruguay.
Thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast around the globe on AFN. It is Tuesday in the first hour. We always check in with SalesportTalk.com's Karen Lyle. And Karen, no United States Admiral or a British Knight today, just you and me, huh?
Well, you know, we haven't done that for a while. I think it's been about 6 months.
Well, what we want to talk about is... dramatic rescue of Vendée sailor Kevin Escoffier by Jean Lacam. Let me just set the stage for everyone, that recently Escoffier in the South Atlantic, his boat went up on a swell, came down and literally folded into a 90-degree angle, got into his life raft, was lucky enough to get that out at the last second, and then a bunch of his competitors, Boris Herman, Yannick Bastavin, and Sebastian Simon, along with Jean Lacam, his countryman, they all went to try to get him. And in the dark at 1:15 a.m., Jean Lacam was able to rescue him. And even the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, called him up to congratulate him. Pretty harrowing situation there, Karen.
It is indeed. And that race we had Alex Thompson, you remember when we were interviewing Sir Keith Mills, you know, he had to leave the race because he was in a foiling boat. And that's the thing about these two boats, the boat that Kevin Escoffier has and also Alex Thompson, they were boats that come up on their foils, as we know, and they were doing this ocean race in it. And so I understand he was going about 27 knots in this boat and right into a wave. And so the force of the wave that was folding over him just folded the boat. And he had just enough time to send off a text saying, I'm in trouble. Maybe I'm, he says, I'm sinking. He says, I'm sinking. I'm not joking. Maybe was his words. And then he got into the life raft, and he had enough time. He had put his survival suit on, knowing that the conditions were bad. And that's kind of this suit that keeps your body temperature warm. And the life raft is an inflatable boat that has everything in it. Plus it usually has a cover, you know, so that you're protected from the wave coming on top of you. And so that's what he had time to do. But what an experience, huh?
And of course, you know what Mayday means in French.
I do not.
It means help me. That's where we get Mayday from. Mayday.
Okay.
That's good. A little French lesson. Just to let people know about the Vendée, it is a solo race. And I mentioned this last week, but about 15, 16 years ago, I used to check in every week on this show with Bruce Schwab, who was from the Bay Area, he was the first American, by the way, to ever complete the Vendée. And we'd check in on satellite phone, and it was, you know, very eerie to have, you know, to hear the tone of his voice and what kind of mood he was in. You know, he's a pretty affable guy, but sometimes you could tell it was getting to him. And I do remember one case of peril he was in. He just said for no reason, where he was sailing, there were a bunch of logs just floating in the water. And of course, if he hit even one, that would have sunk him. And so you think about all the times when you're by yourself where you have to fall asleep. And I thought, what about if you fall asleep and then you end up and there's a million logs in front of you? It's really crazy, Karen.
Well, I think also sailing at night is the biggest challenge. And I've sailed down the Pacific Coast. And you know, if you're in a modern boat, you have instrumentation that tells you about other ships that are nearby, but you can't see the logs on the gear, and you have to look outside and look at the eyes, adjust your eyes to be able to look and see if there's anything that your boat's going to hit, and be very alert. And I think that, to me, when I think about ocean sailing, I think the word that comes to mind is that you are completely alert and conscious of whatever you're doing at the moment and paying attention to what's happening around you. And I think that's why, you know, fear doesn't lock up sailors who are in the ocean, because they're paying attention to what they're doing, and you don't really have time to analyze or be distanced. You're thinking about what's happening right now in this moment and what do I need to do next.
You know, it's interesting when you think about the Vendée, because Jean Lacam himself had to be rescued several years ago by Vincent Rioux. This was back in 2009. But a lot of people, of course, hear this story, and it brings to mind, you know, how perilous this is. And Peep Air, who's a woman, she's also in her first Vendée, and she said a lot of people were messaging her after hearing about Escoffier. And she said, quote, I've had many messages overnight from friends and family wishing me to stay safe. With the underlying worry and concern, it has been a horrific few hours for everyone, and something like this certainly brings to mind that we have chosen to take into sharp reality. I won't say that I am not shaken, but every time I have crossed an ocean, I have implicitly understood I am stepping out of the safety net of quick rescue, so this is a risk I am familiar with. I love this sport because it pushes us to the limits as human beings. None of us go into this wanting or expecting to end up in a life raft, but should that happen, we are ready for it. And you, as a sailor, does that kind of make your blood boil, like you know what she's talking about?
Yeah, I was thinking about this morning. Looking at some of the videos of, you know, what people are doing and going through, I was thinking, you know, I don't have the skill to do a solo circumnavigation race around the world. And sometimes when you see these sailors, and you're thinking about what they're doing and their skills and what they know, it can be just, it can leave you speechless because you don't, you know, you're just absolutely amazed by it. So I was trying to call upon my own experience and just think, well, what is it that I share in common, or what is it that all of us share in common who have skills? And I think that when you're out there on the ocean, you're just aware that you are one of the life forms. It's, you know, we're so full of our own importance sometimes on land, you know, with whatever our position is in the world and whatever we're doing. But when you're on the ocean and you're out there in a small boat and you've got 10,000 plus, you know, feet of ocean underneath you that we haven't even mapped, you know, we don't even know all the things that are underneath us. You're just conscious of the fact that you are just floating there, and you are at the whim of the ocean. It is your mother. It is your source of whatever it is that's going to happen to you, and you have to just go with it. You know, just like being alive, you just have to go with it and pay attention. And you know, it was interesting on this rescue. I was looking at McCam's account, and he had 35 knots of wind gusting. And I might say that actually attempting a rescue is also very difficult because you've got these two boats at different levels because the waves are moving, and sometimes the waves move at cross purposes. And so he had to throw a red life ring over the back of the boat, and Escoffier had to leave his life raft, grab the ring, and then pull himself up onto the rudder of the boat to get on. I mean, that was quite an incredible feat just in and of itself.
Well, you might remember Tracy Edwards, who was the skipper of the first all-female crew in the Whitbread Around the World Yacht Race, and she said that exact thing. She said it was difficult for non-sailors to appreciate how difficult it was. She told Yahoo, quote, "The skill and courage it takes to rescue someone in the Southern Ocean is almost too impossible to describe." And you tried to describe it there.
Well, I think one of the things that's first to know is that the waves are not all coming from the same direction. There's usually waves coming at cross directions and in a boat. And then you have the height, which is the swell, and how high the wave goes up. And then you have the intervals, which is how much space there is between the waves. And I've been out there, you know, the Pacific, you know, our coast here is actually quite challenging for sailing. And I've been out there, and, you know, you have these buoys that are basically out in the ocean to indicate where you are and where the channels are. And when you get waves that are 15 feet high, you can't see the buoys. And I can understand why when Lacombe was coming to look for Escoffier, you know, he has the signal to be able to communicate with him. But, you know, he couldn't see him at first because you'll get this wave and it completely eclipses whatever is in the trough of the wave. And you might be, you know, have the peak between you and the other person. But, you know, it is a very challenging situation.
And finally, for people who don't know the route of the Vendée, you leave France, you hug the coast of Africa, you go down past the Cape of Good Hope, you come all the way around the Southern Ocean, the Roaring 40s and the Furious 50s down there, come around Cape Horn, and you go back up. You basically go down and you circle Antarctica and then come back up. That doesn't sound like you're going to have a lot of pleasant Caribbean weather there.
Well, you know, the beginning of the Vendée Globe was at a bar with three buddies saying, we should go around all three capes. You know? And now, I think sometimes the bars get the better of us, yeah?
We just have about a minute here. What was the longest excursion that you've ever had? Like, have you sailed to Hawaii or to Korea or Russia or anything?
You know, the longest on the ocean has just been between San Francisco and Puerto Vallarta. So I've sailed down the Pacific coast. I have sailed in the Indian Ocean, though, in Zanzibar on the Dows, and some other time we'll have to I'll have to tell you my story of a sinking dhow and an adventure that I had in the Indian Ocean.
Well, can you get it in a minute?
I might be able to. Okay,
let's try it.
So I was I made a friend who is a fisherman, a Zanzibar fisherman, and the dhow is the gaff rigged primitive boat that's been made for more than 1,000 years that sails in the Indian Ocean. And I went out with him, and he had shown me how to sail the boat. The second year I came, the boat had sunk in a monsoon, and he got it back up, and it was still leaking. And so we went out on the boat, and the boat is sinking, and he's bailing, and I am laughing because now mind you, it's not bad conditions out there at this particular moment. You know, the water you can see down 60 feet, and it's clear and beautiful. But he had all his fishing buddies saying, "Don't take her out there. Don't worry. She's a captain. And so we go out there, and I see that the water's coming up on my feet, and I have sandals on, and I was washing the sand off, and I say, "Hey, thank you so much for providing water to wash my feet." I said, "Why don't you let me take the helm and you bail? How long do you think we have?" He said, "Well, about 2 hours before it fills up and it sinks." And I said, "Okay, you bail, and we'll get far enough away from your buddy so that nobody can see what's happening." So he bailed, and we got back. We got the boat back up over the level, and we got back to the shore. But he had been out of commission for 6 months, and this was the first time that he kind of came back, and they were caulking the boat, and they caulked these with linseed oil and cotton.
Unfortunately, I got to leave it there. The end. Everyone lived.
That was
right?
As good as I could do. Yeah, everybody lived, and he was good.
Aaron Lyle, as always, check out the website sailsporttalk.com. We'll talk to you next week, bud.
Okay, sure. Bye bye.
All right, I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back.